But everybody's been so right. It goes by so fast. Like, there are nights that felt long, but at the end of the day, you know, it changed so rapidly at this age, that something to think about every day is to like be mindful and enjoy and notice and be present, because soon enough, you know, he's like scooting along the floor now. He like military crawls on his elbows, and like he's officially mobile. He is no longer a potted plant, and you know, there's a whole new level of responsibility that comes with that. He's just a whole little human, whole little developing human.
Welcome to the final episode of It Takes a Village, Our Path to Leo. I'm Alex Ammons, and I want to thank you for being a witness and a party to this story, which is part educational, part documentary, and part love letter specifically to Amber, the remarkable woman who made Brian and Ty's family possible, and along their way expanded their definition of family. At the time of this recording, Leo had just reached 9 months old. As Brian and Ty have settled into their new rhythm and their new family, they've gleaned much information, not only on how to raise a baby, but on the way the world views gay dads, whether consciously or unconsciously. In this episode, Brian and Ty share a bit about what it was like to be on the receiving end of some well-meaning, but ultimately inaccurate and potentially harmful comments, the impact of people's projections, and how to respectfully be in the conversation of family planning with queer families. Think of this episode as a roadmap for how to have conversations around fertility and family planning in a way that is educated and responsible.
Strange things people say, or unintentional things people say. I feel like the sensitivity ebbs and flows. And I think some of it is like sensitivity. Like people say strange things, but really it's just strange because they're not inside the story.
Brian and Ty shared with me some interesting things that people have said to them throughout this process. One story takes place while they were out grabbing a bite to eat with their au pair, Nayeli.
But so we walk in and we have Leo in the stroller, and we have Ty, and we have our buddy Dan, and our au pair Nayeli was with us. And so Dan and Ty go to sit down with the dogs, and Nayeli and I stay in line. And so I'm holding this, I have the stroller, and Nayeli's standing next to me, and we're looking at the menu together. And this woman comes up, and she is so enthusiastic and is coming from such a kind, good place. She's like, "Oh my God, your baby is just so beautiful." You know, she's like, "Oh God, he's so beautiful." And Leo is looking at Nayeli, and she looks at me and she's like, "Oh, well, geez, Dad, baby's got no eyes for you, huh? It is dinner time and he is hungry." And she's like staring at Nayeli's breasts, making this all of these assumptions, right? So she has told herself this whole story that there's this adorable little straight couple in front of her with this little baby, and the little baby must be starving because he's staring at Nayeli's breasts. And so we're just, and Nayeli's kind of got this big smirk on her face, and she kind of looks at me like, "How are you going to handle this?" And I just looked at the woman and I was like, "Yeah, something like that." You know, we all have this lens we look at the world, and we tell ourselves the story of what we see in front of us. And I think there's some of that happens when you are a gay family that has a baby. And some of it's super harmless. Like, that woman didn't mean to be strange. But yeah, I mean, I think that was a very good example and very lighthearted example of people projecting what they think is happening, you know?
A question that Brian and Ty often field is this.
"So did you guys just like mix your sperm and the egg and like see which one like got in, like, you know?" And I think it's kind of the magnitude of people who have asked us this question, I think that, you know, goes to show that like fertility is not a known process to everyone, you know? And it's a way more specific process than that. There is one sperm injected in one egg in an embryology lab We definitely did not just mix our sperm and see what happens.
Another question. Who's the real dad?
When you, as the parents, might be in a sensitive place about that, right? Like maybe you have been trying and trying to have twins where you're each biologically linked to a child and then you end up having one child. Like maybe there's a sensitivity there, right? Or, you know, maybe in a family they only decided to use one of the guy's sperm.
Or only one of them had sperm to give.
Yeah, maybe one of them had cancer and just has no ability to make sperm, right? And so like there could be sensitivities, right? And it's well-meaning. It's just like these well-meaning little trip-ups, right? If your question is who's biologically, you know, linked to Leo, that's a different question, right? And arguably, you should probably have a pretty close relationship with us to ask that question.
And another one.
Oh, this is so funny. This has happened to me like a number of times when people see me in public with our baby. And it's this like overly enthusiastic congratulations for being a brave dad to spend time with your child alone without mom. You know, like, wow. Like, so I twice this happened to me at the pediatrician's office who like, they know we're gay. Like, I don't, so, you know, walk in and they're like, wow, look at you, dad, all alone today. And I'm like, who are you implying would also be here? You know? And then the follow-up question, at least one of those times at the pediatrician's office, well, how's mom doing? You know? And I was like, guys, read the chart, you know?
And then there are the parents who want to commiserate over how hard parenting is.
The overly complaining parent who wants to commiserate with a family who struggled so hard to have this baby, right? Like our path was not super easy. And some of it's just like the way we look at the world. We like to look at the positive and not just like dwell on things that aren't good. But some of it is like, you know what? Yeah, there are moments of having a baby, like, you know, poop and crying. And like, there's like things that are not awesome. But for a family that worked so hard and had so much heartache to get there, right? Maybe they don't want to commiserate with you over the trivial stuff, you know, especially if the person doing the commiserating and they need support, right? So I say this with sensitivity, like they're looking for support. However, I don't necessarily want to commiserate about how horrible this is when it is what we've dreamed about for years and years and years and years and years. And that just might land wrong, you know?
And as in most cases, what it really boils down to is this, that each person has sensitivities, preferences, and a whole history of experience when it comes to birth and family planning. And it's best to approach these questions generously and without any assumptions.
It makes me think of, you know, even in the setting of a heterosexual couple, you know, in their late 30s, you know, some people might ask what I would consider an insensitive question and say, well, aren't you guys going to have kids? Maybe they don't want kids and that's okay. Maybe they can't have kids, right? And you're going to make somebody cry, right? Or maybe they're trying and they just had a miscarriage and you don't know all of those things and you just like dive in with a question. So it's just like
or maybe she's pregnant right now and
totally.
and they didn't want to tell you or you didn't know or
yeah and or, I think if you're in yeah. the middle of that, it can strike you as being incredibly sensitive.
And I think that, I mean, just hearing all these examples, they're all, you're right, they do all come from a place of like good intention. I think it just shows you how sensitive a topic this is for people. And finding a way to approach new parents or finding a way to approach, you know, friends or colleagues with questions just is challenging, right? And so asking permission or just starting with a check-in, how's it going? How are you doing? How are you feeling? You know, just to gauge, you know, kind of their temperature before you start you know, screaming across the road or you know, hitting people's hot buttons because...
I asked them how practically someone might approach this conversation with their queer friends.
I think a real easy question is just, are you guys comfortable sharing the details of your story, right? Because some people, that gives them the opportunity to say, you know, we don't really talk about, you know, the genetics or...
Although personally, for Brian and Ty, they were not planning on withholding any specifics of the process.
Because for us, and I think I want to hear from you, Ty, sorry that I'm just taking this over, but I think it came originally from you. You were like, well, it's weird if you hold back the details, because then you're like, you're making a big deal out of it. Like, why not just say what it is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that was, or is my opinion, that it's more important or just easier and less awkward if you're just honest and upfront about it. I mean, but that's very much a personal decision for us, and not everybody is like that. And so on one hand, we're talking about how, you know, it's just easier to be upfront and tell the details. And on the other hand, we're talking about how, you know, it's sensitive when people ask us the details. So it's kind of a catch 22, but it's, I think Brian's exactly right that just, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And just asking, you know, permission to ask questions is a great place to start.
Yeah, I think it's uncomfortable when people make assumptions or catch us off guard with questions that feel really personal. But I think starting with like, you know, are you comfortable sharing the specifics of you know, of how you built your family?
I think the other flip side that's even, you know, more sensitive to us is who's the mom? And
I really don't like that question.
You know, because there is no mom. There's an egg donor and there's a surrogate or a gestational carrier. But parenthood, and I think that people think that that's really snarky and offensive when you say there is no mom, or I've seen some interesting reactions. But I mean, if you talk to a single parent of any sexual orientation, or you talk to a widowed parent, or you talk to, you know, any couple that has children, I think everybody would agree that parenthood is more than just the egg and the sperm and the genetic material.
Yeah.
Right. And so being a mother is a lifelong pursuit with this family. Right. And in our story, there is no mother. You know, we have a lot of great female role models and influence in Leo's life, but they're not mom. Leo's got two dads.
And so usually, you know, and this has been kind of a cultivated response. Like when people ask who's the mother, and it happens all the time. Do you know the mother? You know, and I've had to really cultivate like a bit of like awareness in the moment and to not react and kind of just, you know, and just be like, okay, like my internal dialogue, you know, like they don't know what they're asking. I'm not going to get weird about it. And I'm not going to make you feel weird about it, but I am going to make the correction. And so I do very flatly say, you know, we have an egg donor and we have a surrogate. There's no mother in our story. You know, everybody doesn't have a mom and a dad, right? Like some people just have a mom or two moms, and some people have a grandma and a grandpa that were their parents. And, you know, like
some people only have a mom or only have a dad.
Totally.
And, you know, that's an even more sensitive situation where, you know, where's dad? Well, wherever dad is or wherever mom is, you know, that's none of your business and we don't talk about that. And, you know, there's plenty of those stories, you know, for everything. And so I think that this is really a universal message, whether it's, you know, two dads or two moms or any other combination of, you know, heterosexual sort of couple, it's always good to ask permission to ask questions.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to start.
Brian wanted to make sure that folks knew that if you've ever asked questions like this before to them, that it's not a cause for shame, simply an opportunity to consider how it is you have these conversations.
It's just a sensitivity point. It's something to like, maybe just be just a touch cautious about. You know, if you've ever missed pronoun to somebody, like I feel like I almost like see some similarity there, you know, like, if anybody out there's ever done that, or I have done that, and it's like, oh God, that, you know, and that's okay. That's how you learn, right? Like that's how you, you know, you pay better attention.
it's not that like there's a right way and a wrong way, right? There's, I mean, some people would say there's a right way and a wrong way, but really the whole goal is to try to walk in someone else's shoes, right? Try to understand and be sensitive to how they would like to be referred to or how their situation was built, because you don't know all of the, you know, background and history to anybody's story.
As for Brian and Ty's family, what's next? Transfer number 2 happens in January, and they eagerly anticipate a reunion with Amber. In the meantime, they continue to be advocates for queer families and aim to keep the conversation about how their family came to be wide open.
You know, we aspire to be the type of parents where, you know, Leo's story is always something that all the details are welcomed to be talked about, you know, and there's no off, you know, taboo part of the story that he can't know. I hope that he realizes that, you know, everything he needs as far as family, all of those needs are met. You know, he'll have a relationship with Aunt Amber, who, you know, carried him and loved him and grew him. And I hope that his heart is so full.
I'm sure there will be hundreds of conversations over the course of his life with us about, you know, every step of this process. And I'm sure that this podcast will be, you know, part of the education and how he came to be for him. But, you know, it's not our place to, you know, tell him what he can and cannot do. I mean, we just provide him with the honest, you know, facts and with our feelings. And then, you know, at the end of the day, it's his or their, as the case may be, decision.
If you have made it this far into the podcast, I want to thank you personally for being here and for listening. The biggest heaping of thanks and gratitude goes to Amber Lavin, for Leo would not be here without her. Thanks also to Luke, Jack, and Annie for opening their hearts and their homes. Thank you to Jen White and Ellen Trackman from Colorado Surrogacy, to Judith Hakst from the Assisted Reproduction and Family Formation Law Office. Thank you to Dr. Green, Corey, Erica, Tasha, and team at Conceptions. And thank you to all of Brian and Ty's family and friends, their whole village, who have helped, loved, and supported them along this journey to Leo. I'm Alex Ammons. Bye for now.